Crusade Channel News. News you can trust because the truth can be trusted. From the Crusade Channel News Desk, here's Celeste Youngblood.
Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Youngblood coming to you from the Veritas Radio Network News Bureau with your headlines at this hour on this Wednesday, October 11th, 2017. President Trump had words of solidarity for suffering Californians while residents began returning to pick up the pieces and salvage what is left. Then I'll have your stock market report and saint of the day. Spain is threatening Catalonia with direct rule, and a homosexual man is on trial in England for murdering his adopted baby. The New York Post reports that stronger winds are threatening new outbreaks in the devastating California wine country fires in Napa, Sonoma, and Santa Rosa. The death toll of the fires is now up to 17, and over 180 people are missing. Forecasters are calling for wind gusts of 50 miles per hour and 10% humidity into tomorrow night. Lynn Tolmachoff, spokeswoman for California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection, says, quote, "The potential for new fires that could grow exponentially as these fires did in such a short time period is there. Over 2,000 buildings have been destroyed in the blaze." President Trump yesterday assured California of the administration's support in their time of tragedy, courtesy of the Associated Press.
I want to say a few words to the people of California, great state, especially with those in NAFTA. Napa has been hit so hard, and Sonoma, as they deal with the tragic loss of life and property to devastating wildfires. I spoke with Governor Brown last night to let him know that the federal government will stand with the people of California, and we will be there for you in this time of terrible tragedy and need.
Meanwhile, the Associated Press reports that some evacuated Californians are returning back to their homes and property to pick up the pieces left after the devastating blaze. Ken Cahey of Kenwood, California.
What we experienced was horrifying on Sunday night. We were awoken to a red glow coming out of the north and had just minutes to actually get out of the house, wake our kids up, we called our neighbor, woke her up, and it was just a mad dash. And we're back here today for the first time to just see what was left, if anything, and really just, it's as you can see, devastation. There's nothing left. So.
Here is Mark Hyatt of Napa.
By the time I got up here to where my truck was hooked up to the boat, the fire was already halfway down the mountain, and there were embers everywhere, and the wind was just crazy, and there was this huge roar of the flames, and that's when I knew you're out of here. You know, I mean, that's when you hear that roar and you see the wind going like that, you know that there's nothing you can do, and you need to just bail. And I was afraid I wouldn't even get my cats out or anything. I'm just kind of in shock and stuff, and kind of out of it from, I guess, breathing all this smoke. I'm kind of just kind of fog-headed, you might say, and stuff. I was kind of resigned to the fact that this was going to be gone when I left, and I would basically have nothing here, you know. So this is kind of a shock that the house is still here. Trying to keep this house from burning down, because by putting out these little spot fires, I'm afraid if they flare up, they'll catch some of this stuff on fire that's hasn't burned, and then the house.
An estimated 25,000 people have fled their homes in counties north of San Francisco, and many evacuees are still awaiting news of their property. Here are evacuees Kathy Ruiz, Cecilia Brown, and Susie Verheyen.
I don't know how long I'm going to be here or what's happening at home, and that's starting what I'm starting to think about now is, am I going to have a home to go back to?
Well, we just hauled them down here. And we didn't know if the ranch was going to make it or not, but it did so far.
At 6 o'clock, the police came and they said we had to get out. It's just sad to see our beautiful city. I mean, that's the bad thing. I know, you know, a lot of friends have just lost everything. You know, that's really, really sad.
And now it's time for your market report. But first, let's hear from Reuters' Fred Katayama on the market's performance yesterday.
Blue chip stocks climbed higher to another record close Tuesday as Walmart drove up the Dow and S&P 500. Consumer stocks would have risen higher were it not for P&G. Trip Miller of Gullen Capital Partners.
When markets have hit valuation levels like this, and we're over almost two years into a period of time where we hadn't had a meaningful pullback in the market of over 10%, we are overdue. When will that come? I don't know, but we're definitely getting up there in valuation, and it's tougher to find great investments to make.
Investors went shopping for Walmart stocks after the retailer unveiled a plan to buy back $20 billion worth of shares and issued a bullish online sales outlook. Shares hit a two-year high. Oil prices rose on comments from OPEC that the market is rebalancing. That lifted shares of energy stocks like ExxonMobil and Chevron. But Procter & Gamble fell after activist investor Nelson Peltz unexpectedly failed to win a board seat. And Honeywell dipped. The industrial conglomerate said it'll spin off its home and transportation systems businesses into two publicly traded companies. Tech and healthcare stocks pulled European markets lower, but London's FTSE staged a broad advance.
Fox Business reports that stocks got off to a mixed start on Wall Street today as investors are preparing for third-quarter company earnings reports. On the up and up this morning were Delta Airlines, JetBlue Airways, and supermarket Kroger. Now let's check in and pull the latest figures from Wall Street. Yesterday, the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed up 70 points and as of right now is up 18 points at 22,849. The Nasdaq yesterday closed up 8 points and as of right now is up 8 points at 6,595. The S&P 500 yesterday closed up 6 points and as of right now is up 2 points at 2,553. Crude oil is up 13 cents at $51.05 a barrel. In the world markets, the Japanese Nikkei closed up 58 points and the Hong Kong Hang Seng closed down 101. The London FTSE 100 closed down 4, and the DAX in Germany closed up 21. Today's quote of the day comes from Pope St. John the 23rd. It often happens that I wake up at night and begin to think about a serious problem and decide I must tell the Pope about it. Then I wake up completely and remember that I am the Pope. Coming up next after the break in Lives of the Saints and Martyrs, we honor Pope St. John the 23rd. You're listening to Crusade News.
Hey folks, have you ever heard the old adage, you need to wake up and smell the coffee? Well, it's true, and I'm here to ask you to make sure the coffee you wake up to and smell is the Crusade Channel's very own gourmet blend, Crusade Capuchin Dark Roast. Our coffee is custom roasted from the finest fair trade coffee beans and is bagged for us by the Heavenly Roast Coffee Company. Order your supply of Crusade Capuchin Dark Roast today by browsing to mikechurch.com/coffee. And don't forget the Crusade Channel coffee mugs. Place your order for delicious gourmet Crusade Channel coffee today at mikechurch.com/coffee or call 844-5-CRUSADE.
Born the fourth of 14 children to poor sharecroppers in Lombardy, Angelo Giuseppe Roncalli would grow up to become one of the most influential popes in church history. He was a member of the secular Franciscans and in 1904 earned his doctorate in theology, being ordained to the priesthood in Rome. He served in World War I as an army sergeant, working in the medical corps as a stretcher bearer and as a chaplain. He was soon after appointed as apostolic visitor to Bulgaria and titular archbishop of Areopolis, Jordan. During World War II in 1944, he was the apostolic nuncio to France, and his job was to arrange the retirements of bishops who had collaborated with the occupying Nazi powers. There are many documented instances of Roncalli's efforts to rescue refugees, mostly Jewish, during the war. In 1952, he was offered the Patriarchy of Venice and was raised to the rank of cardinal. 6 years later, upon the death of Pope Pius XII, he was elected pope and took the name John, the first pope to do so in over 500 years. It was thought that he would be a stopgap pope who would do very little in what was expected to be a short pontificate. He was an unconventional pope, dispensing with the formal we when referring to himself and sneaking around outside the Vatican to walk the streets of Rome at night. For that last act, he was dubbed Johnny Walker. He eliminated the description of perfidious given to the Jews in the Good Friday liturgy. He established the Pontifical Commission on Birth Control, which would later be expanded by Pope Paul VI. Pope John XXIII was diagnosed with stomach cancer in September of 1962, and 1 month later he would commence what would be known as the defining act of his pontificate, the Second Vatican Council, which addressed the Church's role in the modern world. He died before the conclusion of Vatican II on June 3, 1963, at the age of 81. Usually a saint's feast day is the day they died, or for a pope, the day they were coronated. Pope John the 23rd's feast day is the date of the opening session of Vatican II. Pope St. John the 23rd, pray for us. The BBC is reporting that Spanish Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy is making attempts to clarify Catalonia's status regarding independence. The Prime Minister has asked Catalan leader Carles Puigdemont to confirm whether or not the region has declared its independence. There has been some confusion due to the fact that Mr. Puigdemont signed a Declaration of Independence yesterday, but then put a hold on its implementation in order to make way for negotiations with Madrid. Rajoy held an emergency cabinet meeting yesterday to determine the next course of action and is considering placing Catalonia under direct rule. He subsequently accused Puigdemont of creating, quote, deliberate confusion and is seeking to restore certainty.
The Council of Ministers agreed this morning to require formally from the Generalitat, the government of Catalonia, to confirm whether they have declared independence of Catalonia apart from the deliberate confusion they have created in relation to its coming into force. This prior to any measurement that the government may be able to adopt because of Article 155 of our Constitution. We want to offer clarity and safety and security to the citizens because this matter is important enough for it. Because of the decision adopted today, the government wants to offer certainty to the Spanish people, in particular to the Catalan people, and wants to avoid confusion generated by the Generalitat authorities about a matter that affects and concerns them very much.
Meanwhile, Puigdemont spoke to the Catalan Parliament in Barcelona yesterday evening, affirming Catalonia's right to be independent following their independence referendum and urging the international community to recognize Catalonia as, quote, independent and sovereign. Now we have come to this historic moment. As the president of the Catalan government, I will present the result of the referendum to you and all citizens. I will assume the mandate that Catalonia should become an independent state in the form of a republic. The government and myself propose that this Parliament suspends the effect of the independence declaration in order to undertake talks in the coming weeks, without which it is impossible to reach an agreed solution. We strongly believe that the moment requires not only to allay the tensions, but above all to make a clear compromise to advance the demands made by Catalan people, taking into account the results of 1 October. Breitbart is reporting that a trial is underway in Cardiff, England, where homosexual fitness instructor turned stay-at-home dad Matthew Scully Hicks stands accused of murdering his 18-month-old adopted daughter Elsie, whom he referred to as, quote, Satan in a baby grow. There was evidence that he had been physically abusing her for at least weeks leading up to her murder. As a newborn, Elsie had been removed from her drug-addicted mother and placed with Scully Hicks and his legal husband. Among the injuries inflicted upon the poor toddler were broken ribs, leg, and ankle, and a fractured skull. Scully Hicks claimed that he was struggling to cope with raising the two children. Shortly after her placement with the couple, he was referring to her crying spells as diva drops, and more recently claimed that he was, quote, going through hell with Elsie. He said, quote, mealtimes and bedtimes are like my worst nightmare at the minute. She's been up there screaming for 10 minutes and nonstop. She's just stopped, but I doubt that that's the last I'll hear tonight. Neighbors could hear him screaming at her, shut up, you little brat, among other obscenities. Although she had been placed with the couple in September 2015, her adoption had not been formalized until less than 2 weeks before her murder. We will be eagerly following this story and anticipating the results of the trial. Rest in peace, little one. Just breaking in the last hour is the news that Facebook has experienced worldwide outages this morning. The Daily Caller reports that the social media giant was registering 2,000 outage reports every 20 minutes, according to Facebook's outage reporter. Some of the areas experiencing the outages were the United States, Canada, Turkey, India, Russia, Australia, and multiple countries in Europe. A Facebook representative could not identify the source of the problem and said, quote, "We're working on resolving. I don't have an ETA on a fix yet. Thanks for your patience. In other news, people around the globe were noticed looking up from their phones for a change. In this Celestial Musings, Campus Reform is reporting that there is a crisis amongst so-called diversity educators. Yes, it appears that our heroes and heroines of heterogeneity are experiencing burnout and compassion fatigue from the emotional weight of their jobs. You don't say. My first instinct upon seeing this story was to say that, yes, when you make it your priority to pamper confused grown adults who need safe spaces and still wear safety pins, you become a parent and not a professor, and any parent will tell you that they can experience burnout and compassion fatigue. I suggest perhaps that they return to their role as instructor and stop parenting grown adults, but that barely scratches the surface of this issue. As I continued to learn more about the plight of diversity educators, it appears that the essence of their problem lies in exhaustion from being exposed to various microaggressions from ornery students. Ryan Miller, UNC Charlotte professor and author of the study on this topic, which appeared in the Journal of Student Affairs Research and Practice, says that some scholars consider microaggressions to be, quote, forms of assault and torture. So we have here a portrait of microaggressed white martyrs of academia charging onto the non-politically correct battlefields of our colleges and universities, enduring an emotional blitzkrieg in their quest to spread this rubbish amongst an impressionable student body. Yes, it appears that these diversity educators cannot even separate their microaggression facilitation from their personal experiences. It's like one gigantic therapy experiment gone horribly wrong, in which the therapist cannot decide if he is a therapist or the patient. How far is this madness going to go? These burned-out, compassion-fatigued faculty are saying that they are struggling with feelings of inadequacy, that they do not feel qualified and constantly have to prove their legitimacy to others. Yes, that's because this is a pretend field. It is not legitimate. It is a means by which the institution can elevate navel-gazing and emoting over research, analysis, and coherent expression of meaningful ideas. And I do mean meaningful ideas. I think there are enough legitimate wrongful macroaggressions going on out there that we should never need to work so hard to find an area where justice is lacking. How about abortion? Venezuela? Catalonia, Kurdistan, Harvey Weinstein. The beleaguered diversity educators have, of course, suggested the solution to all of their problems. Give them legitimacy by increasing their salaries and giving them more recognition. They also suggest that their work be labeled as intramural teaching as opposed to service work, because the latter title does not, in the words of UNC Charlotte professor Ryan Miller, quote, fully encompass the intense effort and psychological drain of this work. Seriously, I think Mr. Miller should compensate me for the psychological drain I experienced reading this drivel. Send me your news tips at news@veritasradionetwork.com. Keep yourself tuned in to the Veritas Radio Network for king-size truth from radio-sized speakers. Coming up next, The True Money Show. Celeste Youngblood signing off for the Crusade Channel. Serving you, serving truth.
You've just heard Crusade Channel News. Live on your news, talk, and saints leader, the Crusade Channel. And did you know that all newscasts are available as podcasts on CrusadeChannel.com and on our free app available in the Google Play and iTunes stores? Surprised?
If I woke up tomorrow with my head sewn to the carpet, I wouldn't be more surprised than I am right now.
Crusade Channel News. News you can trust. Because the truth can be trusted.